Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. More than once, she has been the number one realtor in the entire state of Hawaii. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. A beautiful day out here in California, enjoying the sunshine. And, yeah, loving it. So what's it like where you are?
Oh, it's a little cold. It's a little cold here right now. Yeah, I'll be back on the. I'll be back in the warm weather next month, hopefully.
Oh yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Very cool. Hey, welcome everybody to Realty Universal Radio again. Literally the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. Randy Zachary, my name, and Natalie Mullinex, the founder and president of Realty Universal. The website, of course, realtyuniversal.com. And check it out. There's lots of cool stuff there. We've got a great show and a packed show today. And I'm excited. Dr. Jim Gillespie is with us, America's premier commercial real estate coach. And he is on the line with us. Hey, buddy.
Hey, great to be here with both of you.
Hey, hi, yeah. Jim. Good to hear from you, too.
Hey, thank you, Natalie.
I'm so looking forward to this.
So how did you guys connect?
Well, Natalie,
that was through Tom Antion, right?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Tom
yeah.
Antion, a guy who was my internet marketing coach, like from beginning way back when in the late 1990s. He's just a great guy, and and Tom knows Natalie, and somehow we got connected through Tom years ago.
Yeah, years ago, and then you actually had me we did an interview, right?
That's right.
For on
That's
residential
right.
real estate agents.
That's right.
That was a long time ago, maybe 2002, but I'm guessing. I know it was a good while back.
That's approximately right, 10 or 11 years, yeah.
God,
wow.
Yeah.
So you're
time
calling
flies.
From, are you calling from Southern Cal?
I'm calling from Southern Cal. I'm in the Temecula area, which for anybody not familiar with the area, it's about an hour inland and north of San Diego.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I absolutely know that area. I grew up, I was born in L.A., but grew up in Orange County, and we'd go out to the Temecula area, and weekends have a lot of fun out there, and it's obviously grown since then, that whole corridor.
Yeah, the population went from 25,000 people in 1989 to about 110,000 now.
Wow.
The city next door, Murrieta, the same thing. They're about 110,000 each, so
pretty well. Well, because you guys... kind of like bedroom communities, right? People can work in Orange County and even L.A. and live there, right?
Yeah, it's a long drive. It's a long commute. People, they live here, they commute to San Diego, which without traffic is an hour, and the operative word is without traffic. And then places like Riverside, Orange County, Los Angeles, but, I mean, with traffic, people are doing, 2 to 4 hours a day in commutes to work.
Oh, that's too much.
And a large percentage of the people who live here do that. So
especially
with the price of energy going up, it's just a crimp on a lot of people. Yeah.
I'm surprised they do it because it's only, an hour to San Diego, right?
Without traffic, yeah. But in rush hour, it's different.
Yeah. Well, our show today is on, if you were thinking about becoming a commercial real estate agent, a lot of people that will be listening are residential agents already. And then we may have some people listening in that aren't in the business at all. So I think it's a really interesting show.
Very, very cool. And can we call you Jim, Doctor?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey,
Doctor Jim.
Dr.
I prefer
Jim,
that people call me Jim. Your doctor feels a little too formal to me.
What is your doctorate in, by the way? Real estate philosophy? Or
No, it's actually in clinical hypnotherapy. Okay, I've had... some great experiences with doctors, you know, training coaches and stuff who have, you know, fed me some of the top athletes in the world, Olympic gold medalists and other top athletes to work with to really work on their mental skills, their focus, and their ability to perform better in their sports. So it's just it's just been something
wow.
that I love with passion, the mind, you know, why. And I got fascinated in the beginning in real estate, you know, why is it that somebody sitting in a cube or in an office next to another person can look like they're really, really busy, but the person next door is making two or three times as much money. It just, it all starts with the mind, basically.
Absolutely. Wow, I love that. I didn't know you were doing that, too.
Yeah.
We'll have to have another show just on that. And that tapping, you've heard of tapping,
sure.
right, Jim?
Absolutely.
And it seems like a lot of people are starting to do tapping. And I'm amazed that you can actually get certified in just a matter of a couple weeks. And that, and tapping, you know, something.
What is tapping?
It's an EM. Go ahead, I'll tell you.
Yeah, why don't you do it? Because I know about it, but I haven't studied it.
Well,
so
I was. It's emotional. What's it called? EFT. EFT. Emotional feeling. Emotional feeling technique. And well, you know, Randy, since my brother died a year ago, I'm not going to get into the sad part on our shows right now. But I tried everything to get me out of some of my grief. Not that, of course, I'm ever going to stop grieving. But I found about this technique, which is fantastic. It's called emotional feeling technique, and people actually tap on different meridians and different parts of their body while saying certain things. It's kind of mixed in with hypnotism, but not totally. So you may want to Google it. It's EFT. It's pretty interesting.
It might be emotional freedom technique.
Oh, emotional freedom. That's probably what it is, not feeling, right?
I think that's
right?
what it may be.
You're right. Okay, you're right.
But there's a lot of videos on it. They just had a whole conference where they were sending people a video a day to look at, and some pretty powerful and successful people in the area of psychology and other similar arenas are really touting this as something phenomenal that they're utilizing in their practices.
Wow.
I tell you, I did two sessions, and I could feel such a difference right away when I did it. It's amazing. And
really?
And you can Google it and find a lot of really interesting free information as well, right, in videos. And,
absolutely,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's you're right. It all starts in our mind and how we feel, and, I mean, it all ties in with everything. So
wow.
On the real estate side, tell us, Jim, Randy, I think
let's dive
that
in.
You were interested about.
The time is going to fly by.
You know, actually, let me just mention something first, okay, regarding we talked about the hypnotherapy thing. What most people don't realize is that the language patterns of a top salesperson are very similar to the language patterns of a top hypnotherapist in that they speak to the person's unconscious mind and ideally guide them in the right direction of where they want to move to. But most people just don't realize that similarity in patterns between the two. Yeah.
No, I never thought about that because I know with me, I always feel the spirit and the soul and connect and really have empathy and think about the people. And you are kind of guiding. And we always tease around in the business saying, oh, my gosh, we're doing psychology work, right?
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And sometimes with some of the clients you deal with in commercial, you need psychology work afterwards.
I think in any of it. Well, if we make it, and then they all think we're crazy after 20-some years, right?
Yeah,
now, so, yeah, right. So,
wow.
But we're not going to discourage people from on the call from wanting to get into it because it's a wonderful industry, too.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity in it, absolutely, yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, he could have just occurs
and just
to
so
me.
Everybody knows, I spent 20 years as a commercial agent in downtown L.A., so that was my background, and then I've been doing coaching and training full-time for the last 15 years. So, you know, here in Southern California, the predominant commercial real estate association, which I believe is the most predominant one west of Chicago, is the AIR Commercial Real Estate Association, and I was actually president of that back in 1994.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah,
oh,
you know your stuff.
Yeah.
You know it inside and out, and that's the beautiful part about being able to coach it and teach people when you've really done it and dug in and been in it and you're, you know, all these years. It makes such a difference.
Sure.
Well, Jim, let's dig in, man, because I definitely want to add some value to people. And it occurs to me we could absolutely have you back and do a whole
three
show.
Three or four shows.
Real estate on the first half, and then you could dive into all of the other stuff in the second half.
Sure. It's all fascinating, and it all relates to each, you know, each other. Absolutely, yeah.
And then I can hire you for an hour to help me through my grief.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, so being a real estate coach and America's premier commercial real estate coach, what are like some of the major differences working in real estate brokerage and, say, working in a commercial real estate brokerage?
So residential versus commercial?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the differences?
And keep in mind, I've never worked in residential, but I know of residential from you know, I have coached people in residential, but I mean, I definitely am familiar with it. But I mean, some basic differences are going to be, you know, in residential, you're primarily going to be selling homes to single family home users, people and families that are going to move in and live there. Okay, so it's sales transactions primarily, very high percentage. In commercial, you're talking about sales transactions, and sometimes if you're working with a company that needs the building, the company is going to move in and utilize it. Sometimes you may be selling buildings to investors who are buying it to rent out to people or maybe to flip to the ultimate user who's going to move into the property. And then in commercial, you've got lease transactions, which there's many more lease transactions going on nationwide than there are sales transactions. You know, because you're going to have multi-tenant
In commercial. Yeah.
You're going to have multi-tenant buildings like office buildings where it may sell every 7 to 20 years, but there's going to be a lot of lease transactions signed by all the tenants in there every single year.
That makes sense. So somebody in the industry really needs to know, to do both, right? Do they typically always cross over and do both, or does a commercial broker say or agent say, I'm going to handle the sales of it and turn you over to someone else to handle property management? Or is it completely, do they just cross over?
Well, normally when you're in the major cities, commercial agents, and the term broker and agent is in commercial is synonymous. You know, whether you've got a broker's license or an agent's license, the term broker is used to describe any agent who's selling or leasing commercial property. But
that's
interesting. It's just a difference I've noticed in the terminology, basically. Whereas on residential, they really, if they call somebody a broker, it's somebody with a broker's license as opposed to somebody with just an agent's license.
Exactly.
But in the major cities, commercial agents, you know, normally will specialize not only within commercial, but within a subcategory of it, which could be office, industrial, retail, apartment houses or investments or land, and just because there's so much business and activity, and when you specialize in something, you get much better at it. And not only that, when you want to go out and get business from your clients and prospects, they want to work with a specialist as opposed to a generalist. So that's the way it is almost all the time in the major cities with a lot of population.
That makes a lot of sense.
Wow, man. So let me just revisit Natalie's question just to make sure I understand. So for the most part, do folks who are doing residential not really venture into being commercial, or can they do both?
Well, typically, I mean, you know, real estate licenses will allow anybody within their own given state to do any transaction, residential or commercial, okay? But typically, again, there's specialization. And you've really got to watch it. I mean, like, for example, I don't know any commercial agents who, if they got a lead for somebody who wanted to buy or sell a home, would say, oh, I'm going to do that. I'm going to list the home or I'm going to start showing them homes. We tend to really feel strongly about the specialization, so we would find a residential agent to refer that out to.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, on the residential side of the business, if you're thinking of doing commercial, you know, it can be dangerous from a liability perspective because there are so many other things that come into play that unless you've been trained or you're around people in a commercial office, you might know, for example, that, you know, in a supermarket, the mere existence of things like chemicals and antifreeze and stuff like that come under hazardous substances, and there are certain requirements in terms
right.
of, you know, how they have to be stored and things like that. You know, things like sprinkler densities in a building. I mean, you could take somebody and show them space and sell or lease them a building, and then all of a sudden they go down to City Hall, and City Hall says, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to allow your kind of use in this building, and all of a sudden you got a major potential lawsuit on your hands. So there's so many variables involved.
And that's in residential, too. When you work with investors and buildings and properties, you've got to make sure that they're doing the feasibility studies and checking everything out. But I see what you're saying. Yeah. They really need to know what to look for, what pitfalls. And then, of course, the onus always gets put on the buyer. Now, in commercial business, commercial real estate, typically the attorneys are going to be drawing up the contracts. Isn't that so?
Well,
I know
that really
depends
on the people involved, okay?
Okay.
A lot of times, I got to tell you, you know, they lean on the broker or the agent to draft the contract, okay? And that's really a company policy type thing in terms of, do we let the agents do it or do we insist that the other people's attorneys do it? And a lot of times, the people would say, well, I'd rather have you do it so I don't have to spend money with my attorney. So then they want to put it on the agent.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know?
Mm.
And so you just got to watch out. You really got to know your stuff because, like, for example, okay, you could have an industrial user that does some type of manufacturing and you're showing them buildings and you see that it's zoned, you know, like M2, which is medium level, you know, industrial, okay, for manufacturing. And you could say, oh, okay, according to the city's guidelines that I'm reading, your type of business can go in there. And then all of a sudden what you don't know is the city has decided, yeah, even though M2 is okay, we've decided that we no longer want to allow this type of manufacturing in this part of the city anymore, and you got a real tough time they haven't gone down to City Hall and talked to them themselves.
But see, now I know just in being in residential for all these years, and I've done some commercial, and we've had many situations where you have to make sure the zoning's proper because somebody may buy just a building that's residential office and do it through residential, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I know, and I made a rule as far as being a broker since 1990 for agents that the buyers have to go do their own due diligence. We can't tell them, you know, this is absolutely this way, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, we can help with research, but I've seen situations over the years in different – I used to do a lot with raw land, record plat, other types of zoning things, where a clerk may give misinformation. So it really needs to be put on the onus of the buyer. You know, we're more the facilitator, right, to be able – but you need to know what your stuff – you need to be able to say, this has to be checked for da-da-da-da and all these other things. But I would feel very uncomfortable, even in commercial, going to the zoning office myself – giving it back to the buyer and saying, this is what it is.
Yep.
I would want to know
never
that,
want to do that
the onus is on them, right? So they're doing due diligence, feasibility.
What I would do is this, and again, I would never recommend just following what I'm saying without talking to an attorney and getting their input on doing it. But, I mean, ideally, and you know, when you put something in an addendum outside of the boilerplate, it's you know, much more apparent, and people tend to look at that more. So I would always basically have something that says, the buyer has been, advised, buyer confirms that they have spoken to the city of whatever city the building is in, and the city has confirmed with them that they will legally be able to move into the building and utilize it for their intended use, okay?
Yeah.
So again, talk to an attorney on that. Don't just say, oh, I heard Jim say this thing, so I'm okay if I just include that. No, get legal advice. But that basically stands out from the boilerplate in the contract. And if anybody ever ended up in court over this, at least the judge would look at this and go, like, my gosh, you wrote this down here in the addendum. So clearly these people must have seen it just above where they signed their name, you know?
Smart. Yeah. No, you really do want to show disclaim, and make sure they're really doing their homework. We just, writing lot on lots, even house lots, for example, in residential, not flipping over from residential commercial, but somebody may want to build a certain type of house, and they need to have a feasibility study and make sure they can, with the setbacks and frontage and the other rules and regs.
Yeah.
You don't want someone to buy something, and then they find out later they can't get permits, and they're out of luck, and then guess who's going to get sued? So, yeah.
The broker's always going to be named if other people are sued, and you don't want to be in that situation. Yeah.
You had another question, Randy, though. There were a couple more questions I think you were wanting to find out about.
Yeah. And then I've also got on his website, which is realestatesalescoach.com. And my goodness, lots to talk about there, and we've got about 12 minutes
left. I've got over 400 articles written there, for people.
Wow.
To learn things about doing commercial real estate more effectively and making more money, sure.
Yeah, because obviously we're kind of just cruising the tops of the waves here. And if you're listening and you're really interested, my goodness, there's another thing that says, click here for immediate access to more than 300 free coaching and training articles for commercial real estate agents. So you're not kidding, man. You're not kidding about
it.
I got a lot there, yeah. It's actually a free newsletter that people can subscribe to and get my tips on how to be more effective in commercial real estate brokerage. But, there's like a wealth of library there, basically.
So it's realestatesalescoach.com.
Yeah, realestatesalescoach.com and lots of stuff. My goodness. Do you have I'm just curious, again, because we're also kind of into the blending of the two worlds because they all do overlap. Do you have another website for your, for your hypnotherapy?
I don't, because the hypnotherapy is something that, I've certified to do, I have done, I've got a lot of training in, but I actually haven't been marketing myself as doing that, on an active basis for quite some time. I've been really focused within the commercial real estate arena.
And
it's kind of one of those things where even though I can do it and I've been very effective at it, you know, somebody goes, hey, I want a commercial real estate coach, and why the heck does Jim also have this website for hypnotherapy? You know, it's like,
right.
Again, that specialization, if they want to hire the person who's really just doing what they want, you know?
Yeah. Right, right, exactly.
Yeah. And you get to use a lot, of course, of what you do in the hypnotherapy, obviously,
yeah.
in the training of the
Oh, you know,
coaches.
It's just literally, it's just like, you know, being able to understand the real presenting problem that's going on within the coaching client, and knowing how to move them towards where they want to be, and you know, that training really comes into play, where I can really understand what motivates them, what they're up against, how I can tweak a little something, and how they're thinking about something or a concept to get them really excited, light that fire underneath them, and get them out producing great results.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so you've really been able to serve and give back in such a phenomenal way.
You know,
yeah, it's been wonderful.
Interesting, yeah. Interesting too, as you talk this through, and this obviously applies not only to real estate, you know, sales, but I think sales in general, is that people, you know, when you talk about production, I found that people buy from people, right? And I think early on, young salespeople get all focused on the numbers and the quotas and the and even when you're trying to connect authentically with people, it doesn't come across that way. And it takes time, and it takes practice, and it takes doing it, right? You just don't ride a bike by reading
yeah.
about it. You go out and do it.
I love what I heard Wayne Dyer say once. You know, Wayne's like, you know, he's written, I could even tell you how many tens of
Randy
books,
loves
basically.
Him. He came on our show one time by accident.
Oh, that's awesome. I love him. I've seen Wayne speak 9 times.
No, Randy and I were doing a show. Randy's on Maui, and then Wayne Dyer walks by, and Randy ran and caught him.
Oh, that's great.
It was so
that
funny.
Was
he lives on Maui, right next to the Westin Hotel.
It was so
yeah,
funny.
That's right. And he
yeah.
basically says that, you know, you want to do something that you have passion for and that you've fallen in love with, because when you love what you're doing, what people buy from you in a sales situation is the excitement coming off you about what you're doing. They want to be a part of that. They want to get involved. When you're passionate about what you're doing, you're transmitting that excitement to people, and they want to work with you so much more.
Because yeah,
there's
absolutely.
A lot of people in real estate, unfortunately, that are in it primarily because they know you can make a lot of money at it, and they don't know what else they could do that would allow them to make more money and have more flexibility. But the passion for doing it is not there, and it's obvious in the way that they talk and present themselves that I'm here because of these options. I don't love it, but I think I could make more money than any of my other choices right now.
Right, wow. Exactly.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, I saw a stat recently where it's like 70% of the workforce in America is disengaged, really.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
but you know, but that's why it's okay. Like, for example, with us, I mean, we're in the real estate, but then we want to blend in the other parts of what we believe in, and it's okay. You know, you can kind of so I think true leaders kind of can go in and do that, and you have to really follow your heart. So
that's what got me into doing coaching. I was a commercial real estate broker for 20 years, and I started to get burned out on it, and my territory was becoming people from parts of the world who I jokingly said, you know, their idea of the beginning of negotiations means opening of escrow, basically, okay? You know,
right.
You know, where the negotiations really began after we had already agreed on everything. And I just went, this is just not fun anymore. You know, what else can I do? And this budding arena of coaching was coming about in the mid-1990s. And I said, wait a minute, I could do this for commercial real estate people, and I could love this too. And that's I moved in the direction of what my heart wanted, Natalie, like you said.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It was great to transition to something that I love doing.
That you know, like the back of your hand, too, so it makes it a lot easier to take it to that next level.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It really does. It's amazing, and I think it's awesome. When you wake up every day and you're doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Dr. Jim Gillespie is with us, America's premier commercial real estate coach. His website is realestatesalescoach.com, realestatesalescoach.com. And if you are listening live, many of our listeners are archived, but if you are listening and would like to call in and ask Dr. Jim a question, 347-945-5428. That's 347-945-5428. And so Jim, now if somebody's like, I know with in the regular real estate, I've hung around Natalie long enough to know that it's really kind of difficult to do residential real estate part time. Is it difficult in the commercial arena as well? Do you kind of have to be in or out kind of deal?
Yeah, because in commercial, you know, it's very rare to find an office or the broker or manager of the office who's willing to have somebody work there if they're not doing it full time. It's just kind of one of those standards, like going to work for a major corporation. It's like, if you are coming to work here, I want to see you here every single day, Monday through Friday. And that's just kind of like one of the standards for full-time commercial offices.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a – and this is, again, a question, kind of an everyman question, but and Natalie, you guys could both speak to this, but are there characteristics in somebody that you might look for that you would guide them either to residential or commercial, or is really the character traits that you're looking for pretty similar in both arenas?
I would say the character traits would probably be similar in terms of, you know, you feel a gravitation and a passion towards wanting to do this. And again, in that idea of following your heart, following your passion, I would move towards which one you feel you would be much more passionate and connected towards. And I really just love the idea of working with people that were, like, you know, business decision makers, you know, focused on making money for their companies, investors focusing on making money through real estate investments. That was just much more exciting to me to think about moving towards than selling homes to families.
Right.
I felt much more
exactly.
connected with, and I want to do this because I know I'd love it much more.
Yeah, yeah. And so, again, tapping into your passion and, who you kind of really would enjoy hanging out with and selling to and coaching.
Yeah,
and
it's like I grew up in Santa Monica, California, you know, a suburb of Los Angeles, and
yeah,
reasonably
baby.
Close to Beverly Hills. And I've joked with people over the years when they ask me, why did you pick commercial over residential? And I said, well, if I was showing a home to somebody in an upscale area like Beverly Hills, and the thing that was stopping them from buying the home was because the rocks around the fireplace were an eighth of a shade the wrong color, I might come out swinging, okay?
Well, you just have them gut it all out and redo it. That's what you do. But no, it's definitely, I know, it gets old after a while. It really does. It does. It's just a type of, you know. And I think there's a progression, you know, where you want to go and train and teach people, or there's just certain parts of the business you can't do anymore after a while, you know. But I totally relate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. Dr. Jim Gillespie, again, America's premier commercial real estate coach, calling us from SoCal, and his website, again, realestatesalescoach.com. So these days for you, I mean, how much time – are you like full-time in the coaching thing, or are you still kind of – okay, so you're not
I'm
really doing
full-time.
Doing the...
You know, I coach people on the telephone. We have, you know, weekly coaching calls together. Once a month, I interview a top commercial broker on a teleconference talking about what he or she is doing that has them be so exceptional at brokerage. And for the members of the program, I send out audio CDs, a written transcription, a highlight sheet, and they get the MP3 recording too. And then also companies and associations will hire me to go to their conferences and speak at the conferences also.
So
that's
you are
great.
Yeah, you're the real deal. I mean, you know, obviously, as you said, the coaching thing kind of started in the mid-90s, and these days it seems like everybody's a quote-unquote life coach or a business
coach. I know.
And the field has been kind of diluted.
Basically, and that's it, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you get the certified 6-week training online, whatnot. And,
you're right, yeah. And it's just I've never done one of those certification things because, you know, I'm a top expert at what I do.
Yeah.
I've got a doctorate degree, and, like, you know, adding certified coach to it, it's sort of like, okay, is it really necessary? You know what I'm saying? One of the funniest things ever, we had an attorney come out to one of our commercial real estate events who had designed all of our forms, lease forms, purchase forms, and the accolades that were given about the guy in his introduction were just amazing, all that he'd accomplished, and everybody applauds. He steps up to the microphone, he leans into it, and he pauses, and he says, and I'm a notary public.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just sort of like, you know, do you really need that after all the other stuff that shows that you're an expert at what you do, you know?
Wow. Wow. Well, man, so, yeah, I'm just, like I say, this website is amazing. We're going to have you back. We're already out of time. This half hour flew by. My goodness. Dr. Jim Gillespie, again, America's premier commercial real estate
great
coach.
Jim.
Realestatesalescoach.com. And, yeah, thank you so much. This has been really enlightening,
you guys are welcome.
And very intrigued on the other, so we'll have to get you back and talk about some of your mindset stuff as well.
A couple times,
yeah,
that'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic.
There you go. Sure, just let me know.
Cool.
That's great. Thank you,
awesome.
Jim.
Thanks, man.
You're very welcome.
Take care, buddy.
Talk soon.
All right. Wow. So, Dr. Jim Gillespie, good call, Natalie.
That is wonderful. I know. Wonderful. Absolutely. I look at the website, too, because you have so many articles and so much to do. He really knows his stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. All right, we're just about the bottom of the hour. 347-945-5428, the number. If you'd like to call in, we're going to take a break and come back, and we have got John Del Grosso with us from Los Angeles. He's going to be checking in.
California.
He's a marriage family therapist and has written a book, and we're gonna talk about that. And I really love this guy. I'm excited. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Michael Hyatt, professional blogger and public speaker. I'm also the chairman of Thomas Nelson Publishers, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and a Sunday school teacher. I often get asked, how do you get it all done? Two words, life plan. Sadly, I've met very few people who have a plan for their life. Most are passive spectators, watching their lives unfold one day at a time. They may plan their careers, the building of a new home, or even a vacation, but it never occurs to them to plan their life. This is why so many people end up discouraged, disillusioned, and wondering what went wrong. The good news is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can live your life on purpose starting today by going to michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan. There's three reasons why you need a life plan. Number one, it will give you clarity about where your life is headed. Number two, it'll keep you in balance when things get crazy. Number three, it'll give you peace of mind, knowing that you're addressing those aspects of your life that matter the most. Creating your personal life plan is not so much an ebook as it is a life planning experience. In the book, I'll take you through a visualization exercise that'll give you enormous clarity on what matters most. A five-step program for identifying where you are now and how to get from here to where you want to be. A weekly and quarterly process for keeping your life on plan and moving in the direction of your highest priorities. Two planning templates, a Word document, and a separate Excel document that will make it easier for you to create your plan and keep it up to date. You can't buy creating a personal life plan in a bookstore. You can't even buy it on the internet. There's only one way to get it, by subscribing to my free email newsletter. All you need to do is go to michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan and sign up for my free email updates. I'll then immediately email you the download link to this amazing free resource. Don't wait. You can start the life plan adventure today. Experience the power of living your life on purpose.
It's your Minute with Maxwell. Here's author, speaker, and mentor to millions, your friend, John Maxwell.
When I was in college in Psych 101 as a freshman, we took a test to determine our creativity. There were 17 in the class, and I remember it well because I finished at the bottom of the class. Here's what I did that really sparked the creativity of my life. I began reading, and I began filing. Somebody else's idea helped me to create an idea, and before long, I began to sense that there was creativity within me. I just realized that I had to, in the beginning, borrow it from others and then build on it. Oh, I love that. Borrow it and then build on it. So if you look at yourself not as a creative person, you can't be any worse than me. I was at the bottom of my class. 60 books later, I've learned to be creative, but it was a learned art in my life. So go inside. It's there. Pull it out.
Thanks, John. We trust we added value today. For the video version of The Minute with Maxwell, go to johnmaxwellteam.com. Alrighty, we are back, and it is, this time is flying by. Realty Universal Radio, again, the name of the program. Thanks to Dr. Jim Gillespie for joining us. Wow, what a cool guy, Natalie. That was awesome. And we're going to
he's great. He really knows. He's really wonderful. Yeah. If anybody's thinking about getting into commercial, they should definitely look his site up.
Speaking of cool guys. John Del Grosso is on with us, and we've had John on before. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist from, again, Los Angeles, Covina, California. He's been doing biblical counseling since 1984, mental health counseling since 1995, and has a passion for people being healed through a relationship desired by God, with all people. And John counsels using biblical precepts that he's put down in his book, Restoring God's Image, The Narrow Gate of Healing and Transformation. And he joins us. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing well. Doing well, man. Really glad to have you. Natalie is with us, and she is joining us.
I'm excited to hear this. I'm going to go back and recap in a little bit. So
yeah,
we're switching
absolutely.
Over from our last show.
Yep, absolutely. So John, talk to me, man. What's new in your world since last we talked? And then we'll get into the book. Let's get a little update.
Well, not much different. Just continue to meet with people. Continue to study God's Word and try to understand men and people. And, 2 years after the book was written, I've, looked back and look at some things and still teaching it and still seeing it's very appropriate and applicable. And just amazed how many people are, the last few years, the buzz has become emotional intelligence, the difference between being intellectual, being able to deal with ideas, but at the same time not being emotionally intelligent, not being able to deal with emotions and feelings, and I think we've been lied to in many aspects about feelings and emotions. I think, unfortunately, one of the those places where we have not, where we've been represented, I think sometimes is in the churches, who have, I think, misrepresented and have a hard time figuring out just what, feelings, where feelings and emotions belong.
Yeah.
And I think some of that's the backdrop of some of that comes to that we've had some aberrant theologies out there that, talk about hurt isn't a good thing, you shouldn't hurt, you shouldn't have pain. You're not dealing. You don't have enough faith. You don't have enough this. You don't have enough that. And then some of those things are being corrected, I think. Not totally, but they're making their way and being a little corrected. We go through pain and we have a really difficult time trying to understand what it's about or why it's there. And I think biblically we need to, what I've been doing, especially over the last year, is really looking to some people who have a lot more years of working with God's Word than we do. And I think, some of that's looking back towards some rabbinical theology and some of the things that come out of that. And they have a real different sense of
Were you a rabbi before?
The struggle. No, I'm not a rabbi. I'm I'm a messianic believer. So I am Jewish, and
okay.
My grandmother was a Jew. In fact, she was her family was the town she came from in Austria was pretty much wiped out by the Germans during World War II. Her stories of the pogroms of Russia, coming through their town and those kind of things. But their family had fallen away when they came to the United States, had become assimilated to the culture. But looking back at some of, just looking at some of that, the Hebrew roots of and seeing what they think about man and people, and pretty interesting stuff. I mean, when you read those things, it sounds like you're reading Paul and Jesus,
Right.
Because that's what they were. They were rabbis, and they come from a strong thought, and so they had a real handle of being able that there's two things going on inside of us, and we have what they call the animal nature, the animal soul. Paul would have called it the flesh. That's how it was translated in Greek terms, basar, which would have been Hebrew, but it was translated flesh. But really, the idea is we have this base nature that's kind of like animals. We have this passion, and we have these passions for earthly things. We're bound to the earth. Adam was, means the earth, the dust. And so out of that, God breathed himself, breathed his spirit, you know, breathed the mm-hmm. neshama, the soul, into mm-hmm. man. So man is, we literally are, you know, kind of the, back in the, when we used to see the cartoons, the angel on one side and the devil on the other side. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the sense of who we are. We have this thing that is this inclination towards things, towards the world, towards gathering, towards things, and we have to do those things. We have to eat. We have to sustain ourselves. But
Maslow's, yeah.
Yeah, but at the other hand, we have this soul that is this godly spark. That's what the Jews would say, that has been breathed into us. We
and
would call
awesome.
It the spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
And God just doesn't come and take over. Our job is to what we choose. You know, if we sow to the spirit, we will have things of the spirit. If we sow to the flesh or the animal or the earthly nature, that's what we will reap. And our pain comes from a lot of the times that we do the one over the other. And our pain also comes from that there have been people in our lives who have acted out of the carnal or the earthly nature, what they would call the evil inclination, have given into it, and they've hurt us. And so then we believe those lies about us. All the research is showing that those lies start, and these events and these emotions, they're actually physical things. They get ingrained or like programmed into brain centers in our brain. The hippocampus holds the events, the amygdala holds the emotions, and then we come up, then we have to battle against these things. This is what Galatians says. We're in a constant battle, and God sets before us blessing and cursing, life and death. And we have to choose life. But the problem is, if you don't, you have to identify the beliefs. You have to identify the things that are plaguing us. It's kind of like that computer. I just spent the last week probably about 40 hours on with you know, my computer company, because I had these viruses in there, you know. And
you had to figure out the problem, yeah.
Yeah, they were slowing down everything, and they were doing that. And that's exactly what we are. We have these things inside of us, and
they're
lies that we believe, and they just affect everything we say and do. They affect our judgments, and so we have to begin to get a concept of who we are. And a lot of times that concept of who we are, it says, well, you know, we're, now that we've been saved, now that we have God, all these things should go away. You know, we're saved, all our sins have been forgiven, so we shouldn't suffer and we shouldn't struggle. So one of the misconceptions that my book talks about is that you know, there shouldn't be pain, and all I need to do is, I just need to do this, or I'm a Christian, I don't need to be healed. And and that's some of the things that we talk about.
What is your website? So we can find it.
The website would be, you can get the book on Amazon.com. You can, my website is johndelgrasso.com.
Okay.
And people can, like I said, I'm open to people just calling me, because right now I'm been selling the book for $10, and if they go online, they're going to pay $14.50. They can just call me, and I'd be glad to drop one in the mail for them. You know, they could send me a check, I'll drop it in the mail. And I like to talk to the people who have it, because I like to follow up and find out what they think about it and get.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
What number would they call? What's the number?
626-226-7326.
Okay, 626-226-7326. Okay.
Yeah.
Can they counsel with you or set up meetings or appointments?
Oh yeah, we can.
I'm in
California. We work out of different churches, so I have office at different hour churches. But I also do phone counseling. I have people from different parts of the country. That it gets a little iffy, because there were these laws out there. Everything gets restricted and stuff. But usually,
oh really?
We can figure something out on how to do phone counseling if it's out of state. You know, we just have to look at the.
Well,
great.
Things. Yeah, and
John,
it works just as well over the phone.
Oh, I have a quick question for you. I can't help
sure.
this, though, because being raised Jewish, and you're Jewish, and you're Messianic Jewish, basically, right? Messianic.
Yes.
So you
yes.
believe Jesus is the Messiah.
Yes.
What happened, what, just to, I know this is going to be hard because we only have 15 minutes left, right? So in like a 60-second version, I don't know if that's possible, because what happened to you that made you believe, yeah, Jesus is the Messiah?
Oh well,
because your upbringing would be
definitely
different.
Well, what happened? I came from a different way. What happened is my grandmother, when she came to this country, she lived with her mother and father had died when she was young. She came across by herself. She was like about 13 years old, and she was living with the brothers, and they were Orthodox. Ultra-Orthodox. They were Orthodox Jews. And
okay.
when she turned 18, she met my grandfather, who was a divorced Catholic. And
wow.
she married him. And unfortunately, her family, they sat shiva for her. They disowned her.
Oh, that's horrible to say. That's terrible. Yeah, but
yeah,
I can understand.
They disowned her. Now, there were times
Aww.
In her life where, you know, it's a long story, but there were times in her life where my grandfather was sick, and they had, you know, they knew about it, and they helped provide. They didn't ignore them, but they, you know, because of their beliefs at the time, they did disown her. And
oh, wow.
So of course we were raised according to my grandfather's religion, which was Catholic.
Wow.
And it wasn't until about 4 years ago that. I was sitting with a friend, and he's another Messianic believer, but I didn't really know that at the time. And he started talking to me, and the Lord just started speaking to my heart, you know, about the need to, you know, to know who my people were. You know, it's kind of like the Passover every year to remember that I came.
Jewish is a beautiful religion. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and,
yeah.
And so the last 4 years has been a trek back there, trying to understand that, learning about my family, and really grieving over that whole thing that happened, and just learning new things, and seeing how consistent it is with what I taught before, and also some of the concerns that I had about, wait a minute, why is there, this is missing, this is, it seems like there's something off here, and this is filling in a lot of the pieces.
Wow. See, God doesn't
that.
Do it, and there are no accidents that way, are
no,
there?
No.
You know, God wants us to go out and teach it. It's, you know.
But there's, I'm running into, there's a mass movement of people going back to recognizing that some of the theology that was set up out of, you know, 200 AD by the Catholic Church and then later on
mm-hmm.
by the Protestant churches isn't consistent with some of Jesus's teachings and things like that. So there's been a mass exodus back, and more you're hearing people, hey, wait a minute, this is, something's missing here, and what do you mean we're not supposed to, the commandments don't work? Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments, and all this kind of stuff. So it's really interesting.
Well, of course,
and,
I mean, you're going to, I went
yeah.
to Pikesville Junior and Senior High, which was all, back then it was in the late 70s, so, well, 99% Jewish, so I was 1% Gentile, and it was very
yeah.
interesting. I have a lot of friends that are Jewish from all those years. Oh, it was so interesting. My mother made me always go when the Jewish holidays, I had to go to school. I was like the only one there, you know. But now things have changed. But I learned a lot, and it's very interesting. I think, you know, it's wonderful education too, you know. And
yeah.
and God's chosen people, right? I mean, what's happening in Israel right now is really serious. And so,
yeah.
But I think it's wonderful. That's really an interesting story. So you went through Catholic, and I was raised Catholic, so I can relate too.
Yeah.
That's
I
pretty.
I went from Catholic then to the Protestant, born again, then, you know.
Yeah.
To only realize that born again is a Jewish term. It's a term.
Isn't that funny?
Term. Baptism is a Jewish term. It's all Jewish terms. But,
oh, so much, of course.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's funny, though. Lots of times we'll go back to tradition. When my brother died, I've gone to non-denominational churches since the 90s, but then when my brother died, I wanted a mass for him, and I've been going
yeah.
back to the Catholic Church here and there, you know. So
yeah.
so kind of, yeah, it's wonderful. Go ahead. I didn't mean to digress, but I really
no.
wanted to know what...
So let me ask you, what is... Not to, but with the death of your brother, what did that, how did, what happened with that in your life? How did?
It's been absolutely horrible because what I've realized through it, my brother and my son and I were so close because we have a very small family. And my brother is only, I say is because I believe his spirit's still alive, right, up in heaven. But my brother is only 15 months younger than me. And Randy could tell you, it took me to the ground. And I'm usually very outgoing, very on the ball, very together person. And it just took me to the ground. I thank God for the last year of being able to make it through what I made it through. And one part that's very difficult is he died and it was provoked. A girlfriend was cheating. Things happened. It appears that he was run off the road and nobody's in jail. So there's justice that hasn't been served that I know, you know, God says, don't vengeance is mine. Don't think like, you know, whatever. But I don't have full closure. But for me, it's been very difficult. And it's many times because I've always been more motivational and things. I think, what could I, should have, would have, whatever. You know, he was also in a frame of mind that he was upset about the cheating. So I get it. It's been horrible, actually. It's not, I know God makes everything work out for the good, but it makes me further push my goals of helping and serving, you know, in the way that I feel that God wants me to. So, no, it hasn't been fun. I think it would have been easier if it was a heart attack or disease rather than the way he died. I don't mean to make that sound or lessen anybody's death or grief that they go through, no matter how somebody dies. So I wish I could. I don't know. I'm not as ready for it all, and I know we don't always get the answers, right? And I think I do realize that I think my brother and I and my son have always been too codependent. I've been like the mommy of the family, and I think that codependency is really difficult when you go through something like this because you feel like part of your body's been cut off. So anyhow, that's a long answer, isn't it?
No. There are no easy answers when it comes to that. But certainly, you know, the feelings and a lot of times things like that, they have to, you know, there's a healthy reaction, and the healthy reaction is what you're going through. You know, all those things are healthy reactions, but then if it was something that was not natural, then there's this whole sense of, like you said, injustice, which is that's kind of God's heart. But at the same time, there's a sense of like, you know, hopelessness. Like I need the answers, but I can't find these answers.
And then people in society, people don't care. Like, you know, when you see things that, you know, I don't mean not everybody cares, but a lot of things just keep going on, and they're in the justice system. Some things just aren't going to be, nobody's going to be punished. You know, it's just the way it happens. So
they're used to that. They see that every day.
Yeah.
And we're there personally saying, wait a minute, you don't understand. This is important to me, but we can just be another, and we are just another number, you know.
You know, and it's interesting. You have to really, I think you, like Randy knows me very well, and Randy knows I've been very testy the last year, and I've been very horrible, and Randy's been wonderful to deal with me. No, I just mean, in, you know me pretty well, Randy, and it's been a tough time.
Yeah.
And Randy's been a godsend, and that's God. I mean, God's amazing. But I gives you a lot more empathy, and it also helps you grow, and you realize, you know, we're all just humans, right? We're not God. And that's where I think we do need a lot more love and peace in our world. But it does bring up a lot of your childhood things and other issues and things. And for me, I just feel like, oh, my gosh, I was so stupid. Why didn't I help my brother? Why didn't I get him away from that environment? Da, 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 you know, the
right.
whole – and
right.
and then I think I tend to, from my upbringing, get the guilt and then get the knock myself, put myself like, but, and it's not my fault. So, but it makes you want to help people more. And when you see people out there in the world, a lot of people are struggling, and everybody has, we all have different gifts. And I think the thing we really need to remember, and we say it a lot on this show, is that we're all miracles. God made us as miracles. We need to stop trying to be like the other person or what somebody else is supposed to be, you know. We need to be ourselves. And I think it's all a process. And then thank God, though, I mean, because he loves us so much that he, you know, I pray constantly, show me how you want me to serve, what you want me to do. I don't want to get so distracted in what I do that I'm not doing what he wants me to do. So it's a process, right, Randy?
Hmm.
It's a long process.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, those painful things happen in our lives, whether they're emotionally painful things that happen maybe in the relationships, or I wake up one morning and, you know, I'm having these negative thoughts, or something like a catastrophe like this happens that just, you know, it's a piece, it's a dynamite in front of the building falls down, and then you spend years sometimes trying to dig yourself out of it. Hmm. And but that, I think those are the times that, like Job said, you know, do I just receive the good from the hand of God and not the bad? He gives us every day blessings and cursings, life and death, to choose life. And so I think those are the times where we have to stop and say, okay, this pain in my life, how will God use this for the good? It says he will use
right.
it for the good, but how do I
he
do
does.
That? I have to participate with that somehow. I have to stop. I have to say, okay, these
yeah.
thoughts, these feelings, these emotions, I have to submit them back to God. I've got to, you know, talk to people. I've got to, you know, have somebody who will listen to me
right.
and try to help me make sense of these feelings that are going on. Because a lot of these feelings, even though they seem tied to that incident, are repetitive things that happen in
absolutely.
Our life.
Absolutely. And no, absolutely.
Does, yeah, and so that's the time to say, wait a minute, okay, I need to bring somebody into my life. And when it's somebody like yourself or somebody like, you know, others that, you know, we have this sense we've got to just keep going and going and going and moving, we don't take that break a lot of times because it's painful. We don't want to.
No,
you know?
I did.
Yeah,
yeah,
good.
I did. Interesting enough, I had started ministry counseling a year before my brother died, because it's really weird how the sequence of events went, and then and trying to go through all those things that we feel from when we're young, you know, and why we do what we do, or why we feel this way, and then you start looking at it, because it's interesting. You know, they have different. Our show's gonna go off in a couple minutes. The you know, they have talk therapy. And then they have other types. There's different types of therapy. I really do not believe in talk therapy as much. I think we all need talk therapy, but lots of women have girlfriends, guys have guy friends, you know, and,
yeah.
and you talk. But I think it's really more important for someone to say, like, I have abandonment issues, for example, from when I was,
yeah.
and they say, oh, wait a minute, wow, now I can work on those issues. I think it's really important.
Yeah, and unfortunately, too much talk therapy doesn't bring you to that place.
Not at all.
They sit there and they listen, but that's
it's
why
ridiculous.
It's just like the guy that was on before, right? He's saying you got all these people with these. Now they've got this little certification. But he's saying, but I'm an expert. I do this, and that's the thing. We need people. That's kind of what my book's designed to do: to ask the questions to bring you to that stuff that's underneath. Because you can talk all you want, but until you get to
right.
that stuff and know what to do with it,
exactly.
you're dead in the water.
And you know, a good counselor is going to point those things out to you, and then
yes.
you can go, oh, really? Because for some reason, when you're in the midst, of it, you can't see the forest from the trees, and that's you know, completely different. So very important.
Wow, this half hour has flown
yeah.
by. John, we need you back, man, because
hey.
I have several questions as I've listened to you talk.
We've got like three. I think we have about 2 minutes left. What were you
yeah.
gonna?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What were you
yeah.
gonna ask,
so
Randy? I'm sorry.
I just want to. No, we have to wrap it up. I just want to let everybody know again. You're listening to John Del Grosso, johndelgrosso.com. And the book is called Restoring God's Image, The Narrow Gate of Healing and Transformation. And John is an amazing, amazing marriage and family therapist, gifted on so many levels, as you've probably surmised if you've listened the last half hour. And we need to get you back because... yeah, definitely have some questions for you.
Yeah, and your book though, can you say the title again?
Restoring God's Image, The Narrow Gate of Healing and Transformation.
Well,
very cool.
And
very,
that's,
very cool.
Yeah, because I think it's really interesting. You know, people are more open at least nowadays to talk about things, I find, you know, than they were
yeah.
years ago,
yeah.
Which is wonderful. I mean, it's a process.
You can, again, check out John at johndelgrosso.com, johndelgrosso.com, and he's in the L.A. area, but absolutely open to talking to you via phone or Skype. And, John, thanks, man. Thanks for stopping by. We have, like, 40 seconds left, so
hey,
we got
to... Oh, everybody, thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward
you.
To listening to the replay, and God bless you, too.
All right.
So,
man.
Everybody out there, I just wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.